Blog Talk.
You're here. I'm Kate Hennessy, and it is indeed a beautiful life. You are listening to Get Focused Radio. We're thrilled to have that original song, Beautiful Life, as our theme song now. The amazing and talented composers are Beth Hamilton and Connie Rossiter, and they're the talented duet behind Beckon, that's B-E-C-K-O-N, that you hear in our opening. We're going to have them on the show pretty soon to do some live performing, so I'm very excited about that. We'll let you know when that's going to happen. If you'd like more information on how you can get your copy of their first full-length studio album, Beautiful Life, go to www.beckonofficial.com. Their angelic voices are truly inspirational. Please stay with us for the next hour. I'm hoping that we will inspire you and help you refocus when life gets in the way. Each week on Get Focused Radio, I'm going to try and bring guests on that have overcome challenges or guests who will inspire you, and they'll share tools and techniques to help you create a more fulfilled and happy life. Feel free to connect with me after the show at askkatehennessy@getfocusedradio.com. I have a really special show planned for you today. It's a little more intense topic than we've covered before. We have the very talented Richard Norris, who will be joining us to talk about his latest book, Hoof It, 7 Key Lessons on Your Journey of Success. What can I say about Richard Norris? Good grief. What hasn't Richard Norris done? He's been a competitive swimmer. He's been a veterinarian. He's been an Army officer. He's got his postgrad. He was a postgrad student in ophthalmology, MBA. He's been unemployed, like many of us. And he's also now one of Europe's foremost speakers and coaches on transformational self-leadership. What the heck is that about? We're going to ask him. He's also here today to talk about what is happening out there specifically with regard to men in every aspect of a man's life, including his career and relationship. Richard has a lot to say about that, and I know that we've got some callers already calling in to talk to him about it. Before we get started, I want to share the call number with you. If you're calling from outside Canada, please call 1-888-435-1293. For our Canadian callers, it's 1-646-200-3268 and press 1. All that info is on my website at www.getfocusedradio.com. Let's not keep you waiting any longer. Richard, are you there?
I certainly am, Kate. Thanks very much for the warm welcome and introduction.
Well, you know what? You are a very impressive man. Your bio alone is an amazing read. And, I did read your book, Hoof It.
Hey,
and I have to tell
good.
The listeners, I have never read anything quite like it. I think it really does speak to men, but I do feel that a woman will get a lot out of this with regard to some very insightful insights about a man's mind. And you're going to talk to us a little bit about that. I know you have so many resources that you offer out there, but before we start that, share with us a bit about your background and how this book came about.
Yeah, no, happy to do that. Obviously, albeit I'm living in Scotland, I'm actually Canadian by background, but through me joining the British Army as an officer, as a veterinarian, that's what sort of planted me here, and I haven't figured out how to fly home, so that's why I'm still here. I guess for me, ever since I was 8, all I ever wanted to be was a veterinarian, Kate, and that's all I set my mind on. There was a lot of hurdles, there were health hurdles and just experiential hurdles and to get into that whole profession, but I managed to beat all the odds to do that.
Yeah.
And I thought that, once I graduated, that was me. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I quickly realized that it wasn't as fulfilling as I thought it was going to be, so I thought, I'll go off and do postgraduate training, so I did some in internal medicine, then some in ophthalmology, and I was doing interesting stuff. I was doing eyelid surgery on snow leopards and cataract issues with snakes and things like that. But again, there was something missing.
Yeah.
And I know you gave me my quick bio, but all of it it wasn't this. The path I've been on is not one I ever would have chosen, never expected. But it's the one that's actually manifested. And so I transitioned out of my career, went off to do an MBA to find myself and find out what I was good at, and everything came back. I should be doing leadership and personal development. My year, unfortunately, I had a new job lined up in London with a big international consultancy in behavioral motivational change, and regrettably, our year finished 3 days after September 11th, so myself and 70% of my classmates instantly unemployed.
Right.
So I was 18 months unemployed, and I really decided, my wife said, if you go back to veterinary medicine, she said, I will divorce you because I can't live with you because you'll be miserable. So any guys out there listening, I'm sure there are ladies out there laughing. The guys out there, listen to your wives. They know you better than you know yourself. And for me, I then bought myself a job and I bought myself a business coaching franchise. And that's where I started to pick up all the insights that you did, particularly that relate to the book, Kate.
Mm-hmm.
And it was I found myself saying the same thing over and over again when I was meeting business owners and directors and boards, and, you know, when they were talking about success or how do you be successful. And, you know, I had identified from my sporting career as a competitive swimmer for 23 years and also just being a fan of, elite athletes and business success, I started to notice there were certain things that were repeating patterns. And so I thought, how do I write this? I thought, well, I keep saying this, and I don't like to waste time. So I thought, well, I'll write a book. And then me being me, I like to set myself a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, I could write a boring book that could put everyone to sleep in about 10 pages on, seven key success factors of leadership and life and success. But I said, no, the best books I've ever read are ones that are actually written as an allegory, a metaphor, a story. So
right.
I ended up writing a story, as you've read. And I honestly, to finish off, I honestly do not remember writing the book. I had the seven lessons on a piece of paper on a timeline. I did a little bit of research on the environment of the book, which is based around migrating wild beasts. So that might cause some eyes to raise. And then I just put fingers to my keypad. I do not remember writing the book.
Right, and I want to say it's like a children's story, but it's certainly not for children. The way that it's written, you kind of, when you first started, you've got the two characters there, Vic and Mentor, which is, I love that. And you really get into it in the very first chapter that this is definitely not a children's book. You really do speak, though, for the most part, to men. And I'm not excluding women out of this because I know that I have some women callers who want to talk to you about this. In that,
sure.
Did you find it was men specifically that through, your journey, that they were struggling with being just that, men, in their career specifically, and of course in their relationships too?
Yeah, actually the whole men thing came up after writing the book. And it just started to realize because, I've gone through some periods more recently of getting a real focus on, what is my calling? Because as I said, I was dissatisfied with the veterinary profession. Even when I was business coaching, I said, something's not quite right. And then writing the book, I said, I'm getting there. And everything kept coming back to, I take everything from a faith base and, I've been praying and fasting and trying to get clarity. And, over a succession of fasts, three things came. First one was be a messenger. Second one after that was to figure out what my message was, and it was about self-leadership. And then the third question in the third session was to whom? And the messages came back loud and clear. People just like you. And I said, okay. So I started to write that out on a piece of paper. Who are people like me? Here's all the stuff I've been through. And then it just kept resonating, saying men, 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 men. I said, I can relate to men. Ladies, I love ladies. I love women. But I must confess, and I struggle even to understand fully my wife. So I would not presume to speak into, how to be a woman, how to be a lady, because that's just not, I wouldn't know that. But I can certainly relate to the guys and their issues they're facing today.
Right. And when you talk about, and I don't want to give the book away, but I do want to touch sure. just quickly on, you say there are seven key lessons, all right,
yep.
to your journey for success. And again, yep. we're not just speaking to men, but this really does resonate for a man, as Richard
yep.
just said. So just touch on those seven key lessons.
Sure. Yeah, the seven lessons are, first, you got to have a very strong and clear vision. You know, again, using men specifically, we're hardwired, I think, to lead. And doesn't mean to say ladies aren't and women aren't as well. But, you know, guys, it definitely, you know, from our anthropological times, you know, you were the hunters. You know, we're out there and you got to think, oh, we got to provide meat on the table, et cetera, et cetera. And I know society has changed. So you got to have a very strong and clear vision because, you know, without that, you know, hey, you don't know where you're going. Second one is you must be passionate about what you're doing. You know, mm-hmm. if you're not passionate about your vision, don't be surprised if nobody else is. So you've got to be absolutely passionate because, as I say, you know, passion is contagious. If you look at the word passion, within that word is the word I, and you play around with the word a bit, and it says I pass on. So it's up to you to pass on your passion and for your vision and everything else.
Okay.
Third one is you have to be absolutely committed to it. You know, when I'm coaching clients, I get them to eliminate the word try out of their vocabulary pretty quick because if you probably, for some of your listeners, they might have teenagers or kids or spouse or whatever, and they say, oh, yeah, I'll try that. But whenever somebody says try, they're giving themselves an escape clause because it means, well, I can say I tried and I'm not being dishonest.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you say I'm absolutely going to do that, then you're making an absolute commitment. So it's an all or none.
Okay.
Four is you must be prepared to change and learn because change is inevitable. Growth is optional. So if you want to grow, if you want to succeed, if you want to progress your own journey of success in leadership, life, whatever, is you must be prepared to learn and change. And then five is you must be decisive. You know, nobody gets anywhere. I'm sure I could ask pretty well everybody on the call how many people have procrastinated over something and it cost them dearly.
Mm-hmm.
I know I did on numerous occasions. And then six, because we also know people who don't make decisions. And we also know people who do make decisions, but then after they made the decision, they still do nothing with it. So number six is once they made the decision, they act on it. You know, they just get moving on it, even if it's just a small step, but they're progressing it. And then number seven is the bonus factor. And this has been the biggest challenge for me, and I literally thank God that I've got kids because they teach me this one all the time, is how to have fun. Because, you know, life is not meant to be all work. My dad had a very strong work ethic. And he also said success comes through hard work, and I'm going to, nah. So sometimes I'll play around with clients, Kate, and I'll actually challenge them for the next week. Take the word work out of your vocabulary and say the word fun. Hi, honey, I'm going to fun today. They'll look at you like you're weird, but it's starting to hardwire your system a little bit differently.
Okay, so now we've got those seven keys. Here's what I want to ask you. The very
sure.
first one, when you're talking mm-hmm. about, you know, men were hunters. Okay. If we have really enabled them, that mm-hmm. we've taken away their ability to be the hunters. If women have stepped in so hard that mm-hmm. men are no longer feeling like hunters, how are they going to do the rest of the key lessons? How are we going to get them back to number one?
That's absolutely a great question. I think that's taking the balanced view and reading between some of what you shared, Kate. Part of the challenge is, you know, men have admittedly created some of the issues that are in society as a result, and, you know, they've allowed themselves to be painted into a corner. And you know, because we, you know, quite honestly, there have been some bad examples over history there where men have absolutely taken advantage of, abused, and women are seen as second or even third class citizens. And I'm wholly against that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think the challenge is today, it's more to the point that because of the pace of society and everything else, and I'm sure that there are stereotypes out there, but they're, in many ways, they're generally, some of them are right. Like guys are unitrackers, you know, we're unitaskers generally. Ladies are really great. Women are great at multitasking. You know I'm good at doing one thing at a time, and if I've got other stuff flying my way, it keeps me off track. And really it's about how, you know, it's supporting the men and actually saying, you know, because my challenge to guys is actually, guys, you got to step up. You know, no longer does your wife or your partner have to do everything around the house and et cetera, and you just show up from work and then park yourself in front of the TV and become a mindless vacuum, mm-hmm. is you've got to step in. You've got to step in the phrase step up, because, you know, part of it, you know, marriage, if I take that institution as an example, you know, it's two are leading the way, and it can't be lopsided, because, you know, you then have a marriage with a limp.
Right.
Or, you know, to use an analogy. So the real challenge is actually just is to confront the men and say, listen, and I know we had this conversation the other day, Kate, is for the women out there, is to challenge a man and say, come on, God, you know, I want you to play this part. And, you know, and I think a lot of it is they've just abdicated because they've lost their way, because all of a sudden they're finding themselves being surpassed by women, because women are in many ways far more adept. Because if I'm just going to summarize, one of the core leadership skills, and I've had this on other interviews for leaders, whether it's at work, whether it's at rest, whether it's at play, is what's emotional intelligence. And guys are as thick as bricks generally in relation to that, and we need to develop that skill. You look at any big Fortune 500 or anything nowadays, and they say one of the core leadership skills they're looking for is emotional intelligence, and
right.
that needs to be developed.
Right, right. And I do think, too, because we touched base on this a little bit the other day, you know, you have children, I have children, and the way that you're raising specifically your son, you were telling me how, you know, he already knows at a very young age that, you know, he holds the door open for a lady, and he, you know, he does that automatically. And I have found what has changed drastically, And I see it in our young men, in that because of the way we women, and I'm a very, you know, very strong woman. I'm an entrepreneur. I've done it all, and been married and all that good stuff. I think that we have truly, would the word be demasculated men in many ways. And by doing that, by taking over in certain aspects, by not letting them be the head of the house in many ways, and I know that many women are going to absolutely disagree with me, but I think that just like a country, you can't have two leaders. You have to have someone making the decisions, and then you have to have the group going along with the decisions so that there is conformity and so that there is a nice progressive lifestyle. I see many husbands and wives who butt heads on a continual basis because they both want to be the king. And I really believe, I truly do, that you have to have, of course you have an opinion, we all have opinions. My husband would be the first one to say, oh my God, that woman, you know, makes me crazy. She always has an opinion. At the end of the day, there has to be someone that says, okay, I respect what you say. I feel that this is going to be the best road for our family. This is what we're going to do. And the family follows that. When we spoke the other day, I told you that I go out now and I am so, you know, dismayed to hear how the, you know, the younger people talk. And everyone's going to say, oh, it's just because you're old now. No, it's not. I wouldn't speak a certain way in front of my mom today. And I wouldn't speak a certain way in front of my male friends as I would perhaps with my girlfriends. And I think that's where everything's changed. Now they don't care. And the young men say anything they want in front of young women. And I've said to our youngest, who's 13, I've said, I don't like the way your friends speak. Oh, Mom, you're just old-fashioned. No, they are disrespectful. What women today get now is complete disrespect.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I can relate to that, because I remember I was in a church when we lived down in England once, and the pastor from the pulpit actually made a joke about women, and it wasn't in the right favor, and everyone laughed. And I actually pulled the pastor aside at the end, and I said, that was totally out of order. I said, we are meant to respect one another. We're supposed to love our neighbors as ourselves. I said, that was not coming from a place of love, and I said, you've got to make an apology. And to his credit, he said, you're absolutely right, Richard. And he did. And you know, and there was a, I can notice a shift from then on, across the board, where the men in the church actually treating the men, the women with far more respect than they do. But I think one of the challenges with the youth of today, and it's one of the cancers in society. I don't know ultimately what the root cause is, but is, you know, there's a lack of great male role models. You know, unfortunately, there's a lot of single parent families around there because, you know, I'll put the guys on the guillotine and say, guys, we're generally, from what I've seen, don't want to commit to anything. You know, we're afraid of commitment. So, you know, I've had conversations in the past with some guys and they say, they've been living with someone for a year. I'm not making a judgment on them, but I just said, well, you know, for me, marriage is like the best thing since sliced bread. And they say, well, it's just a piece of paper. I say, well, if it's just a piece of paper, what are you afraid of?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they'll backpedal and they'll come up with some other reason. But, you know, generally speaking, I think a lot of it, the challenges with what we see in society, there's lack of male role models that are honorable, that are respectful, that show integrity, you know, all those positive characteristics are just, and it doesn't help the media is bombarding us and always flags up the bad examples and everybody gravitates towards those and say, see, and they and for whatever reason, we then are in society comparing ourselves to the bad role models.
Exactly.
And just like, that's one of the reasons why soap operas are such a vacuum, because people will say, well, at least my life's not that bad, but they're focusing on the negative as opposed to the positive.
Well, you know what? Because we're talking a little bit about media and whatnot, I have a caller online. Do you mind if we take a call, Richard?
go for it. Can't exactly guarantee that I've got any answers. I have an answer, not the answer. But
okay. Well, I have Ann on from South Carolina. Ann, are you there?
Yes. Hello.
Hi, Ann. We were just kind of talking, I think, about something that you're going to talk about, because we were just talking about role models on the media aspect of it and whatnot. And how are you, Ann? Thank you for calling in.
I'm great. Thank you. How are you all?
We're well. What did you want to talk to Richard about?
Well, this is a great conversation, and I absolutely am one who agrees with you and the things that are being said 100%. As I mentioned to you and in my blog post I wrote, my husband and I both have been very concerned is a good word to use about the media, how they portray men a lot of times. Mm-hmm. It seems to us like most of the time, but maybe it's just the things that we're seeing. It may not be most of the time, but I think that the biggest place we've seen it is in commercials and definitely some regular shows and movies and things like that. But where men are just made to look like kind of bumbling idiots and just like they, you know, are not capable of doing anything. And if a woman is in the commercial, she's the smart one and she always has the answers and she always figures out all the problems. And, you know, I mean, being a woman, I certainly don't want to downplay the role that I have or the importance of my role, but I just feel that men are being put down and I don't like it.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's not helping the problems that we have that are, you know, that have been discussed during this broadcast, and it's not helping our children to develop a healthy view of their parents and the different roles that we have and the importance that each of those roles do play. And I do not want my son or my daughter viewing their dad in that way. I want them – I'm going to get emotional, but, you know, I want them to see him as a hero because I think that is the way that children in the past a lot of times have viewed their parents. And
well,
I think
you
that
did,
that's good.
Didn't you? I mean, I can tell you for a fact that my dad was in the Air Force, and then he was a police officer. People know from my, you know, I do motivational speaking and whatnot, and I came from a very abusive past, and my dad was not the kindest of men, but I've long since forgiven him because I think the war did some pretty horrible things to him.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I'll tell you this. I was absolutely in love with my dad. He was the most handsome man. I thought he, as a police officer, I was so proud that my dad was a police officer. And I think that is one of the things. I don't think that the kids now look at their parents with that same respect and kind of awe, like
admiration.
You know, wow.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they don't. And I think they don't because that has to come back to who you are and how you raise them. You know, we've kind of lost our, I don't know, we've lost our ability to have control of our children. And I guess that's not really the right word, is it, Richard? I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, we probably abdicated the responsibility. I had a conversation with my daughter's teacher at the front end of her year. She was just starting school. And I said, unlike some of the other parents, because I knew sort of the catchment area that we were dealing with, I do not expect you to raise my kids. I said, that's my job. What I need you to do is act like a radar and flag up things that I need to be aware of so that I can address those in my daughter, because obviously I'm not at school all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the same goes with the nursery staff that look after my son. But if I can pick up on a couple of things which Anne was referring to, and, you know, and her getting emotional, and I love that because, you know, guys have an essential role. Men have an essential role. And I'll paraphrase this because I put it up on my website a little while ago because I came across a quote out of Pinterest, I think it was. I said, little girls, their dad must be the first hero in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And for little boys, their dad is the hero they want to become.
Right.
Okay, and that's an essential part. But the real, I guess the essence of what particularly a man's role is in life is passing the mantle. And this comes out of a book by John Eldridge called Wild at Heart, which I distill messages down their books to the purest form. And I reinforce this in my daughter every day. A father is responsible for instilling in their daughters, in their women, that could be some of the challenges with the youth today, is a father's mantle is to pass on to their daughter that they're beautiful. That's all I reinforce in my daughter all the time. And I pray over that. I pray with her every night about that. I pray over her, and I tell her all the time. My son, on the other hand, needs to – I'm challenging him to step up, and I'm always saying to him, as John Elder says in the book, is you have what it takes. In both cases, the father has a key role to pass on those mantles of self-esteem and self-worth.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, you're talking about leadership, and I just wanted to mention that my husband and I actually co-author a blog. It's a food blog, but it's called the Saturday Evening Pot, but we sometimes blog about, bring other issues into it. And so my most recent post, I put some of these media examples where, you know, men are being made to look this way. But you know, you're talking about leadership and how, you know, men really, I believe, are called to be the leaders of the home. And you had mentioned, Kate, where, you know, when there's a big decision to be made or whatever, and you know, you say, well, you know, I'm just going to respect and agree that this is the right way for our family. You know, sometimes we may not agree. You know, we had a recent decision where it wasn't necessarily the decision I disagreed with, but the way that my husband handled it. But, you know, I'm a big girl, and I'll get over it. You know, he's the leader, and, you know, if I choose not to accept that and and see that and act in that way in our home, then my children are going to grow up, I believe, with an improper view, you know, of mm-hmm. how what the home should look like and how those roles should work together, you know. And
right.
And we are one. I mean, when we become married, we are one. And you're talking mm-hmm. about, you know, how can men deal with if, you know, they don't feel like the hunter. Well, you know, maybe in your situation, you know, the wife – you know, may need to contribute some financially, but if you're one, you're both, you know, she's helping in that.
Right.
And, you know,
right.
I think that, you know, it doesn't have to be an assault or an attack on your manhood.
No, it's all about respect.
It's a team, and you're
right.
A team, and you're doing what's best for your family and your home.
Yeah. Well, I agree
with
you, Anne, and you and I are surely in the minority. I know we are. However, that's fine. Bring it on. I'm a big girl too, and I'm you know, I'll tell you this, Anne. You're obviously a loving wife, and you are a great mother. So keep doing what you're doing, and thank you so much for calling in. Stay listening, and I'm going to have to let you go because our switchboard is lit up. So I want to see
sure.
if anyone disagrees with us, Anne. Take care. She's obviously a very emotional thing to talk about. Because
yeah.
sometimes, you know that a lot of people do not agree. And I think in our life, we women want to be, we want to be liked, we want to be loved and liked.
Mm-hmm.
And that means going along with the flow in many ways. And to say,
yeah.
no, we don't agree with the way things are going, and we're not going to let our kids, be raised
yep.
that way.
Yep.
We are in the minority, Richard. Do you agree
yep.
with that?
Yeah, I do. And I think one of the things is an insight that I had, just tracking slightly back to the respect thing. I look at my kids, and kids today, they call adults by their first name. And I had a real issue with it when I was in the military.
Yeah.
Because one of the things I noticed was my senior NCO, when I was commanding a unit, we'd have unit functions, and we'd go over to eat people's houses, and my staff sergeant was calling me sir, and his son was calling me Richard, and I'm going like, this is just wrong. And
yeah.
so my kids, they address everyone by Mr. Mrs. None of this, and we've got neighbors down the road, and when their kids are in my house, I make them call me I let them call me Mr. Richard. So it gives some affectation of respect for your elders and everything else, and making sure that that's in order. But to pick up on something that Ann shared and to further this a little bit, one insight that I gained a little while ago, and I've talked about this and I've written about it, I think I've got a couple of blogs or an article on it somewhere, is, if we take marriage or even just couples, you're coming together, two imperfect people are coming together. It is not anybody's role to try and change somebody else. What you can do is encourage them to make those changes, but you can't make them change.
Right.
And one of the distinctions I make is, we got two imperfect people coming together, but our role in each other is to help that other person become the perfect person that they're meant to be. So we're there to help one another perfect each other as we're meant to be. And just that perspective alone, I've had lots of feedback. People said, wow, that's such... I say, well, I didn't get that. I said, that was a download. I said, that was one of those wake up in the middle of the night epiphanies. Oh, wow. It was so profound, but it makes so much sense.
Of course. Of course. We're going to take another caller, Richard.
Sure.
And I'm not sure who this is. So caller from 661. Hi, you're on the air. Hello? Hello?
Somebody speak and you'll be heard.
did I lose you, caller 661? I think I did. Okay, so I'm going to go over. Let's see, who do we have on the air now? Is that John?
John Goldberg is here.
Hi, John. You're calling from Sacramento. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling
in.
Did you have something you wanted to talk to Richard about?
Well, my understanding was that one of the topics of this conversation was men whose careers are in the doldrums. Is that
mm-hmm.
accurate?
That's accurate,
yeah, it can
right,
be,
Richard?
Because I can relate to that one.
Well,
yeah,
tell
well,
us your, what your story is, John.
Yeah, mine is. Well, I have an MBA and had a great job with a multinational corporation. Made good money, did a lot of travel, and felt like I was making a real contribution in my work. And then the company went through a bankruptcy. This was in 2000, and it was sort of a long process, but it was in the early 2000s.
Okay.
So I lost my job, found another one, a good job, where I was doing training work, leadership, communication, teamwork, things like that. So I still felt like I was making a contribution, but I was getting paid a lot less.
Yeah.
And then that organization had a fiscal crisis, and there was another mass layoff. So I took another job, still doing similar work. So the quality of the work or the nature of the work is not bad, but I just keep making less and less money.
Mm-hmm.
So I started my own business to try to fill in for that. But it takes time away from the family, and that's a concern.
Yeah. Do you have okay? So do you have a question, John, or are you trying to feel your way around into something else?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to get my career back on track.
What do you think, Richard?
No, I can so relate to John. I've got the MBA. I've been unemployed. I've seen my income go south. I can relate to just about everything there, and And some of the stuff that I've learned along the way, John, and maybe there'll be a nugget in this to help yourself, is one thing, and I found this, and that's one of the things I've identified with Hoof It. It tends, the book actually resonates with people at that transition point, is to really ask some, and I'm sure, John, you've all probably asked these questions, but it's to stick with a couple of them. And one of the critical questions you need to ask is one, is what's my purpose? And, you know, a lot of people say, why am I here? Why am I on this planet and things? But, you know, but I found that that is one of probably one question, and it took me years to actually figure this one out, but that's a question I must ask and get the answer to. What's my purpose? Because once you understand that, and you said, John, that you do leadership and training, right?
Right.
Okay, so, you know, because my purpose, and when I distill it down, because I do it very specifically, I distill it down to one word. My purpose is about transformation. So if you look across all the roles in your life, so what I would suggest you do, John, is identify what are your top three roles where you invest most of your time, energy, and money. Okay, and write those down. Okay, you know where those are. And then look for
talking
common
about
patterns.
Personal, I'm sorry, Rich, you're talking about personal and
yeah.
professional roles?
Yeah, exactly. So if I was going to do
okay.
me, my top three are dad, business, business owner, and husband. Those are my top three, because
uh-huh.
that's where I invest most of my time, energy, and money. So you look at those
uh-huh.
three and say, okay, where do I absolutely get my buzz, and I feel like everything's just flowing like easily in those roles. So, you know, one of the things, and it sounds like you and I are a lot alike in many ways, I realize one of the things I'm best at is a messenger. So I'm good on stage, I'm good delivering workshops, and it's always about people actually having a shift so that they actually become more who they're meant to be. So my one-word purpose is transformation. If I'm helping people, teams, or organizations transform, then that helps. So if you're looking at your career, because what I now use, that's one compass. And the other one, the other compass you need to establish, if you haven't done this, John, is write down in detail what are your core values. You know, I've got seven identified for me, and those two things alone become a compass for any decision, any opportunity that comes my way. Will this help
mm-hmm.
me move toward my purpose or help me fulfill my purpose? And the second one is, does this resonate with my values, yes or no? And if it doesn't, I don't care how good it is, how big the check is, I just don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, which sort of comes in with this, is have you actually written out, John, what your definition is of, well, two definitions. One, success. You know, what does that mean to you? Not the world's definition, but have you actually defined what success would be for you? And then in relation to your career, and you can probably get some of this from your previous experiences, what, for each of those roles, because what you want to compile is your ideal job and put it down on paper. And I've done this,
mm-hmm.
and I've done this with friends of mine who say, why do I keep attracting schmucks? And they actually go out there and they write out, and before they know it, they meet their man of their dreams and they're happily married ever after, because mm-hmm. they've always been abusive relationships. So there's a few things just there which will help reset your radar. So, you know, because then once you've got that in place, those things are more likely to show up, whereas if you're just because I know I can relate, John. I'm guessing your head's busy all the time. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Can I just ask, John, what age you are?
62.
Okay. So 62 is young. Is, you know, I mean, there's still lots to do out there for you. And I agree absolutely with Richard. It sounds as though you're kind of all over the place, and the best thing to do to get refocused is absolutely to write it all down, right, Richard? I mean, do one of those, one of the things that has often helped me, have you ever done a mind map where, you know, where you take a piece of paper and you put a circle in the middle of the paper and you put your name, and then off of that, you put down, you know, a little line and another circle about, you know, a goal and how are you going to get to that goal? And you just
mm-hmm.
keep going with that so that you see it on paper. So you literally take it out of your head, that big mess, and put
uh-huh.
it on paper.
Yeah, because the way sorry, John, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say I've done mind maps, but not about me. So that's a good
yeah.
that's a good thought.
You are in that
I can...
first circle. Right.
Yeah, well, I learned from the best. One of my clients was a 7-time world mind mapping champion, and she just taught me so much.
Yeah. Well, Well, thank you so much, John, for calling in, you know, and you know, keep us updated as to how things are going for you. For sure, go to, Richard, what is your website?
My website's leadingmenonly.com.
Leadingmenonly.com.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And you can also, John,
go ahead.
Yeah, you can also
ahead,
drop
Richard.
By my Facebook business page, which is just facebook.com/RichardNorrisBiz.
Perfect.
Okay.
Perfect.
And Kate, I was going to ask, can I give my training business website?
You absolutely can. Please do.
Thank you. It's interpersonaltrainer.com.
Interpersonaltrainer.com. Please,
right.
Listeners, make sure that you check that out. And if you have any anything to give back to John, that would be awesome. Thanks again, John. We will talk to you again.
Thanks to both of you.
Thanks, John. You're welcome.
Oh, yeah. Now there's something that we hear quite a bit where, you know, someone has had an amazing career, and at 62, you're not ready to retire or settle down. I can't see that for me, and I sure as heck can't see it for you.
No.
No.
I don't lie down. One thing I'm known for is I'm absolutely persistent. If I hit resistance one way, I'll figure out another way to go, because I just feel like... No, and it's interesting what John's situation is not atypical. And, you know, I had a vision a while back where I just saw a line of men stuck at a crossroads.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just felt myself being pulled out, taken to the front and said, okay, Richard, you got to help these guys.
Yeah.
And it really comes down to... empathizing, educating, equipping, empowering, and encouraging them to actually make the decision and move on. And John's situation, gosh, I can resonate with that so much. And the thing is, the other thing is, because sometimes it's part of the question is you lost your passion.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's about revisit all your passions. Where did you lose that passion? Because there's something significant right there. And I was talking with a guy down in Africa today about the exact same thing. I said, you got to go back to where you lost it.
Right.
And identify what were the factors in there, because it might be you've allowed other factors to influence your decision, whereas actually you're still you. But for whatever reason, you allowed something to stick to you, which is a label which doesn't apply.
Right, right. And when you talk about you spell out the words failure, like what does
yes.
failure mean?
Well, if it's an acronym, so if everybody writes it down the side of their page, down the left-hand side. Failure stands for focused and insightful learning using real experience.
Okay. So tell us what that means. Say it again so that we get it.
Focused and insightful learning using
yeah.
real experience.
Okay.
And it really comes down to, you know, I used to think there was a time where I hated failure. I'm a reformed perfectionist. I used to be a perfectionist. But then it suddenly dawned on me that perfection is an illusion, and you can kill yourself trying, and it often holds you back from actually committing, making decisions, moving forward, and learning.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I remember my dad always used to say, you know, Norris is we don't quit. You know, even if you fail, get back up, et cetera, et cetera. And, I really came down to it, and I talked to business owners, and, you know, they said, and there's some out there, they don't want to fail, they don't like failure. And I said, listen, I said, if you don't fail, you look at anybody that's been successful, any of the big role models out there, like whether it's with Steve Jobs or, Bill Gates and things, you can bet your bottom dollar that those guys failed. Steve Jobs had quite a few failures. He's got more successes. So when you succeed, it's just one step beyond that last failure, because
yeah.
with each failure, you only fail if you quit by the world's definition, but failure is really just a huge lesson. And you just say, where's the lesson? And sometimes you got to dig for it. Sometimes it slaps you around the face.
Right.
But the thing is, you take the lesson, share it, because that's important, because then you're less likely to, you're hardwiring into your system and helping prevent other people, so you're helping lift everyone else up.
Yeah.
But the other key thing is, you know, what get the lesson and make sure you embed it by, you know, applying the lesson so that, and whether that's reinforcing through changing a habit pattern or changing a system in your business or, getting rid of some clients, whatever, but move on the lesson.
Right, right. We're going to take another caller, Richard. This is Jane from North Carolina. She's been waiting for ages to talk to you. Jane, are you there?
Hey, Jane.
I am there, and I appreciate
it. Thank you for waiting. You are very persistent.
Well, that's true, and he might want to put that on the characteristics on Richard's list. List, by the way. I'm 82, and I'm sole proprietor, and I publish books on energy-efficient lighting, particularly one most recently for the general public. But I'd like to make a suggestion to Richard for his seventh characteristic.
Okay.
All right. Yep, go.
Okay, you said have fun. I really think you should take that off. That's not a really a required characteristic. I'll tell you what I think's required. See humor in life.
Say that again, Jane.
See humor in life. People
see humor
need to
in life.
All right.
Be able to see humor.
Yeah.
They're not really required to have fun. The other thing you might want to add is an eighth one, feel rewarded by your activities.
Yeah.
I like that. I think in 82 we're going to listen to you.
Okay, I've had a lot of life experiences.
Well, yeah, and that's absolutely valid. And the I had to pick a word, but so I used fun. But you know, in my book, and I think Kate can relate to this. You know, a lot of it is about seeing the humor in things. And, you know, it's not taking life so seriously, kind of thing. That's sort of the approach I was taking on that. And then
well, you
can't,
because when you think, and I'm quite sure, Jane, you know, at 82, you have 30 years on me. I'm 53. And, you know, Richard is not quite there yet. But I'm for all of us, we've all been through many, many things. And I'm quite sure in 82 years, life hasn't been a complete bowl of cherries for you. And I certainly it hasn't been for myself. But, you know, there are a couple of choices. Either you find a rope and a beam or you don't, right? And you get through and you pull yourself up and you absolutely, laughter is and trying to see things in a different way. I remember I once said to my mom, I'll just tell you this, Jane. I once said to her, because I had continuous what I thought was terrible luck. I was in numerous car accidents. And I said to her one day, oh, I have the worst luck. I just have such bad luck. And she said, well, you can look at that in that you have very bad luck or you have very good luck. Because of all the things that keep happening to you, you keep landing on your feet and you get out there and you are again successful. You are, you know, you have children who love you. You have a good relationship, you know. She said, so, you know, you didn't get killed in the car crash. You live to tell the story. So really, what kind of luck are you having here? And that changed my whole outlook on everything that ever happens.
That was very, very good advice.
Yes, yeah. And she's almost 90, so, you know, she's still a hoot and a half. Jane, thank you so much for your insight. We really appreciate what you had to say, and thank you for calling in.
Thanks, Jane.
Bye now.
Well, I'm telling you, that's very insightful, eh?
Absolutely, and the thing is, I stopped at 7, otherwise I could have be waiting for ages, because I said, you know, there's 101 different leadership characteristics. I just picked those are the 7 that just kept coming up to me. So, but I, you know, I take the point. You know, absolutely, you could keep going on those.
Well, you could.
Everybody's different, but like you said, I hadn't thought about it, but a lot of those will resonate more specifically, probably with men.
Yes. Absolutely. I'm going to take one last caller, and it's Anita. She's been waiting to speak with you for a bit. So Anita from Brooklyn, New York, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much. I'm just calling to say I'm not going to say exactly how old I am, but I'm a 50-something.
Okay.
And I've
been... Yes, ladies don't give away their age.
Right. Well, some ladies do, I don't. And, I mean, I was laid off from my job in November, and my problem, I mean, everything you're both saying I think is so important, but, you know, I'm doing freelancing work. I'm having trouble focusing, though, because I used to teach, so I'm looking for a job teaching. I do writing. Right. I'm looking for a job writing. So I'm sort of like a little bit all over the place and just to market myself. So, I mean, I don't know exactly what I'm asking you, just that it's hard because if you want a job, I agree focus. I agree, and I'm good at both of those things. So it's just sometimes hard to just say, this is what I want. This is, you know, what you said, you know, picture. This is, do you understand what I'm saying? So
what can you tell her, Richard?
Yeah.
I think some of this comes back to Anita is, you know, because, again, I completely understand where you're at because I've been there at least three times. And it's actually it might be just journaling. Just get all your thoughts dumped on a piece of paper so you at least get it out.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
a conscious
yeah.
mind can only occupy seven pieces of information at a time. So if you get
yeah.
one piece come in, the other one's gone and you've forgotten it. So you capture it.
Yeah.
It comes back
yeah.
to the same for yourself. You said focus is an issue. You know, you're in many ways taking back what Kate just said about her mother said, you know, it's either bad luck or good luck. You can look at this as an opportunity to finally
yeah.
do something that absolutely resonates with who you are. And so you
yeah.
can look at all the things where catalog all the stuff that you absolutely, that gives you a buzz, write it down.
Uh-huh.
And say, okay, and start to build a profile of this would be my ideal job. Then the other thing is if you're still, I'm guessing you're still seeking employment, is then
yeah.
you work your network and apply what's called the rule of 200. And the rule of 200 is most people, if you look at their cell phone or whatever, will have at least 200 names in there. And
uh-huh.
of those 200 people, they, on average, most people have 200 people in their phone. So you're just one step away from 40,000 people. So if you
yeah.
put out to those 200
yeah.
people and say, and you've built your profile, this is my passion, this is what
yeah.
I really want to do, put it out
yeah.
to those 200 people. Specifically, this is who you're looking to connect with. The odds are those somebody like that will come up. If you just say,
uh-huh.
listen, I'm looking for employment, that doesn't help anybody.
Yeah, because
right.
what would someone say back to you? Oh, okay,
yeah.
well, we'll keep our
yeah.
ears open for you.
Right.
Anita's
yeah.
looking
yeah.
for something. You have to
yeah.
figure out first, just tell me if I'm wrong,
yeah.
Richard. I think Anita
yep.
has to figure out first what Anita wants. Where,
uh-huh.
what's the passion?
Uh-huh.
Because
at your
at the stage of your life now, you should be enjoying what you want to do. And
right.
and so you have to do the mind map thing again and,
yeah.
and figure out
yeah.
what it is that Anita's in that circle, right? Because
yeah.
as much as you're saying you kind of have an idea, you're all over the place.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
What's your purpose?
And,
what's your
and
values?
I would absolutely be getting in touch with an amazing coach. His name is Richard Norris. Because sometimes coaching you through something like this
yeah.
really
uh-huh.
does help. Just that
uh-huh.
little bit of insight and a
yeah.
couple of, you know, I know that Richard has some key specific ways that you can kind of get yourself back into knowing
uh-huh.
what you're doing and what your passion is. I'm going to have to
yeah.
put you on a hold again, Anita, and I want to thank you for calling in.
Oh, that's
we'll
okay.
Have,
thank you.
We'll have more
yeah.
info for
pleasure.
You for the rest of the show. Thanks again. I can't believe, Richard, our time is just flying by.
No, there you
just
go.
Flying by. You're awesome. So I want to talk a little bit about that, about your coaching, because I think that it is a huge part of what you offer, and I know
mm-hmm.
you do it so well. Tell us a little bit, you know, about that, about, you know, how people how people get coaching and whether you know
mm-hmm.
if you've got a good coach.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I put up a video on this and some people say, you can't do that. You're taking away business from yourself. I said, no, I said, I'm just being honest. And for those people out there, if you're thinking about you're stuck, then
mm-hmm.
you're usually stuck at the edge of your comfort zone. And, you know, realistically, there's only, I think, 99% of us cannot bridge our comfort zone without somebody else being there to help us through, whether they've been there before or they're just there as accountability partners or whatever, but they'll help you get across. And a lot, and that, hence the big burgeoning market for coaches and everything else. And, you know, when it comes to identifying, you know, should I get a coach or whatever, you got to ask yourself three questions. First one is look yourself in the mirror, give yourself an honest assessment and say, am I coachable?
Okay.
A lot of that means is, will you allow somebody else to help guide you and you won't be digging in your heels all the time? Two, because they're going to be, if a coach is any good, they will confront you. Second one, and they'll encourage you as well, but in the issues where you're digging in, they'll definitely confront you. Second one is after you've answered that and the assumption is, yes, I'm coachable, the second question you need to ask is, okay, you're looking around, you're looking at coaches, don't go for the first one you meet. You know, it's like anything, you know, comparison shop. and you get two, or let's say you shortlist, you got two or three, and you say, okay, then you, the next question you need to ask is, can I see this person leading me?
Mm-hmm.
Because coaches are leaders. You know, they've
right.
got to lead you in the direction. You guide them, you give them an indication of where you want to go. They're responsible in part to help you get there. And then the third one, assuming you've got the right answer for that one, the third one, which is probably the most important one, but certainly one I use, is you then ask them a very frank and open question, who's coaching you? And if they come back and say nobody's coaching them, they're not walking their talk.
Okay.
Okay, and they will only get you so far.
Okay.
So I have a variety. For me, just to give you an example, I got a variety of coaches, real less real. My kids and my wife are the best coaches I'm ever going to have. But I've also got some other coaches on the business side that are helping with the areas of my business, which I still need to learn on, more on the technology side than anything else. But you're always looking for those opportunities to be challenged and to be stretched. So.
Well, and doesn't that certainly push your, you as a motivational, mentor and career mentor and whatnot? It certainly pushes your ways for someone to learn with you, because if you're still learning from somewhere else, you're bringing that to the forefront, and then you're giving
exactly.
that back to the people that are saying, Richard, I am all over the place. How am I going
yep.
to, focus and just even get started on this journey of finding my passion, generating myself, branding myself, and then, getting a position, whether you need a job or whether it's in your relationship or anything with your partners or your family, your children. I think that I absolutely agree. If you aren't still in the learning process, you can't possibly be a good coach or mentor to anybody else.
Yeah, and you're either growing or you're dying. and when it comes down to leaders, there's two types of leaders. There's the leaders who just want followers.
Yeah.
And as a result, they're not going to allow their people to grow, and that's why you get a lot of companies where people are leaving the ship because the leadership won't allow them to grow.
Yeah.
And then because they're threatened, because it's an ego trip for them. And the other leaders, the ones that you really want to work for, are the ones that are leaders who develop leaders. Their
Absolutely.
Expectation is the next generation is going to surpass them.
That's fantastic. Richard, on that note, I'm going mm-hmm. to have you give us your website again, please.
Sure. Happily, it's www.leadingmenonly.com. It's still formative because I'm waiting. I'm building it around feedback that I get, so it's very formative. And then for those people who want to hit me on Facebook, if you go to facebook.com/RichardNorrisBiz, I've got daily updates and videos and various other things that go up on there. So
wonderful. And if you didn't get that, you can contact me at www.getfocusedradio.com or go to askkatehennessy@getfocusedradio.com, and I'll give you all the information and how to get in touch with the amazing Richard Norris. His book, Hoof It, 7 Key Lessons on Your Journey of Success, Transform Your Life, Fulfill Your Purpose. I want to thank you so much, Richard. I really enjoyed that. Amazing and insightful. And we will talk again soon.
Oh, excellent. Good. Well, hopefully it's been a value add for your listeners, and hopefully, Kate, it's helping your show to grow as well.
It certainly has. And I'll be talking to you after the show. Take care, and
okay,
thanks
great.
Again, eh?
Thanks, Kate. Okay, bye.
I want to thank everyone for coming in and all those great calls. We certainly learned a lot today. I certainly did. And Richard, as always, he's a great pleasure and joy. Do get in touch with him. Join us next week on Get Focused Radio with my guest. She's back, Susan Fox. Susan was on last month, and not only is she an amazing personal motivator, career mentor, but she's also a gifted numerologist, and she's going to be here next week doing mini readings for our calling guests. So that's going to be just a hoot. Oprah Winfrey is putting Bowmanville, Ontario on the map. This amazing town was chosen to be on the next season of the series Million Dollar Neighborhood. Each week they have to complete a challenge. This week's challenge was to come up with meals that are healthy and inexpensive to create. So please grab the kids, head out to Quarry Lakes Golf Club in Bowmanville this Saturday, 12 to 4. You can enjoy what they've cooked up. They're also looking for donations.
for their silent auctions, so contact Amanda at 905-440-0831. I want to thank everyone for tuning in today. On behalf of my guests, Richard Norris, and myself, Kate Hennessy, I wish you an amazing day. I will see you all next week.
Beautiful.